but I'm not sure how that works.
Okay.
So really, if it's just you, Chris, and Steve and I, that would be great. And then, so 9:30 is good, and I will let Steve Fimigletti know that. And if you can put it on your calendar for Friday the 4th at 9:30, and I'm going to write to Zach and ask him to set up the Teams meeting, okay? Thank you so much, Chris.
You bet. Thanks, Randa.
Sure.
Terrific. Thanks, Chris. And thank you, Randa.
Sure.
Okay. First of all, anything more on the two proposed statutes, HB 9021 and Senate Bill 4998? Anything on those before we move on to the next item?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, you're welcome, Stephen. Thank you for keeping an eye on that. And thank you, Beth, for keeping an eye on what NFB is up to as well, because I know they sent us an email blast about that several weeks ago. So I appreciate the follow-up on all that. Now, this item is not on the agenda, but without objection, I'd like to add an opportunity for anybody who has any further comments to make to do so now.
I do, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Steve.
Excuse me. The Low Vision Group has been really moving ahead slowly, but we're getting there. If anybody wants to come to the next meeting, it's going to be the 16th of November at 1 o'clock.
Oh, and I have a little bit of, I'm sorry, Steve, were you finished at that moment?
Yeah, I'm done.
I did ask our BRS leadership about this matter in regards to how they do business, and they told me they use Medicaid rates for rate setting, but that there are times that they might break out of those rates and look at rates used by other agencies, or just look at rates in the private sector, and for example, like maybe for tutoring or something, and then break away if it's felt like this is needed, and they feel like they are not hemmed in by a federal or state requirement to adhere to those rates. I'm not sure that it is done a lot, but their view at BRS is that they can make rate adjustments if it's called for. And you, at the last Low Vision meeting, I was asked to look in. I've made some other inquiries to which I don't have answers, but the BRS leadership told me that there are circumstances in which they'll break away from Medicaid rates for things that they fund, which sounds like maybe we could if we wanted to. However, I wouldn't. Of course, as I think I said before, there's also the money issue, which is if we were to increase rates and spend more money, do we have the money to do it? That's another issue entirely, and always an issue, money. Anyways, that's a brief little report that I figured I'd make since there was an opening in the conversation.
Is that, you know, if that's practice or the policy that they've actually written down?
I have a feeling it's practice.
Okay.
But wait a minute, hold on.
Because the world's worst kept secret is that Medicaid rates are wholly inadequate, and good luck finding a provider who will accept them.
Yeah, and one thing I also don't know, we use the DSS fee schedules. I don't know if that's identical to Medicaid. Like, I might think it is, DSS runs Medicaid, but I don't know if that's the same thing. So I think that they may have tried to draft some policy changes and they never did it. So I think kind of within without policy, they may make have times where they change the rates from Medicaid, but I don't know if they have a policy guidance on it, a written policy guidance.
Yeah. Along the same lines, we've asked each of the supervisors to see if there are any policies within their department that would create a problem if we were going to increase the rates for low vision. I know, Matt, are you up to date on this?
I'm sorry, did you say Matt?
Yeah, it's, is that his name from DSS?
Yeah, Matt Frank, yep.
Well, Matt, are you up to date on what we're trying to do?
What are you exactly trying to do? I'm trying to get the specific question.
Well, the specific question is, the last time the rates were raised was like 2007-2008.
Okay.
And we've had a lot out of low vision providers leave. Some retired, some left because they couldn't work within those rates. They felt they were too low. And what we're trying to explore is, we're exploring within BSBY if there are any policies that restrict us from trying to see if we can up the rates a little bit. And that also includes for prescription glasses and so on, as well as a low vision provider, because it takes about 2.5-3 hours for them to do the exam. The other thing is, Andrew was looking into regulations to see what kind of regulations that we're under. And I know Andrew's been in touch with someone at DSS on that.
Right. So now I recall you had mentioned this, I believe in the last meeting or the meeting before. I do know Andrew has CC'd me or was going to CC me on future correspondence or reach out if assistance was needed. However, I have not heard of anything on DSS's end as far as an update to that. I haven't also, I don't think at this time I've been CC'd as of yet, but if there's anything you'd like me to inquire about, I guess I could make an effort to get a message out, or, you know, we could wait for Andrew's contact at DSS. I'm not sure where we are with that.
All right, would you contact Andrew and you could work out?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just going to suggest that you two guys can get together. Maybe we can work out a strategy on finding out a little bit more about what we are able to do about rate for a provider.
Certainly.
Andrew, it's Beth. Wouldn't we have to raise the rate by bringing it to the legislature in January?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Then how do you go about raising those rates if they're too low? So we can get some doctors to do this.
I'm increasingly leaning towards the view that BSBY, if the money question is answered, that BSBY might be able to raise the rates as a matter of an operational protocol and say that the rate isn't $5, it's now $7.
Right.
And I don't think we need to let it.
Especially since it hasn't been raised since 2008, if that's true.
That is true.
That's
well, that's what I got told by DSS. Yep.
Okay.
So, for example, I spoke to I emailed with a woman at DSS named Nina Holmes, and she had said, I don't have much institutional knowledge of this because I started at DSS in 2008,
oh, yeah. Exactly.
Which is about when they were updated. So she hasn't been around for an update in these low vision fee schedules. And recognize that state government regularly controls costs by keeping down what it pays private providers of anything. Daycare, group home services, group homes would be a massive expenditure. Nursing home care, where we have thousands of people in group homes, thousands of people in nursing homes, and the nonprofit providers are always, understandably, clamoring to the legislature for increases in those schedules of payments because they're behind the times. And the legislature and the welfare, the DSS, have to consider what they can increase, because a 1% increase has millions of dollars of implications. Obviously, that wouldn't be true at BSBY, but on scale, it could still have a significant thing. I mean, in adult services, we have some spending caps, like, what, $200 for, what's the $200 cap for, Chris Lassen? Devices?
$200 for devices. We pay all associate fees without regard to any limit. But we have a limit of $200 on basically tangible goods that are given to clients, whether those are prescription glasses or off-the-shelf magnifiers. And I personally don't, I mean, this is just my opinion, I'm not sure that the cost cap is, I'm sorry, that the fee schedule, rather, is a real disincentive to getting doctors to participate, because quite a number of them are doing it out of a sense of obligation to their discipline and to, you know, to serve the public. I think maybe some internal improvements in just processing of the low vision evaluations, you know, being more responsive and timely, might eliminate some of the concerns that doctors periodically identify. But that's just my, and admittedly, I am very biased because our funding is continually decreasing year after year in adult services. And that is part of the reason why, you know, we have instituted our cost cap. We would be dipping into bequest funds if we needed to, you know, pay a higher rate for any service. But that's, I mean, that's just one person's perspective, one program's perspective, I should say.
So it sounds like the only thing that's been stopping us from actually raising these rates is a combination of bureaucratic inertia and, you know, cost reduction headwind that has sort of kept things down, and nobody has really paid enough attention to it to discover whether we had the ability to raise the rates. And it's my understanding, incidentally, that, and Mary, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but federal policy, at least as far as what rehab is concerned, prohibits putting a cap on services.
Well, actually, yeah, I have a hand up for another reason as well, so I'll
okay, Laura's yours.
Just to talk about what Chris was saying, because it actually just came up recently, you know, that if a provider was to charge an individual out of pocket for a low vision evaluation, it costs $360. Our fee schedule is $145. So keep that in mind as well, you know, that like if the incentive to increase it by $10-$15, I agree with Chris, is not going to probably make a huge difference for the doctors. But that's just my two cents, because I know that the actual cost is a lot higher than what we're paying, a lot higher than what we're paying. So that's just the first thing. I mean, but I'm sure anything would they be happy about. But anyway, as far as the federal regulations, you know, I did send along to the group, I think I sent it to the group, I sent it to somebody, you know, like what our policy manual states. Invoke Rehab, our policy is based off of the regulations, which is based off the WIOA, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which, like you said, Al, is correct, that you cannot put, you could put caps on it, you can't put means tests on it. So you can't you can't charge people based on you know, how much they make, you know. So you could be a billionaire and you get the same service. You know, that's basically the way that we Rehab Act acts. There's nothing, we can't do a comparable service to an individual who makes, you know, a lot of money. We can't say you have to pay for that because you're wealthy. You know, like that's what the Rehab Act says. You know, but as far as fee schedules, there's nothing in WIOA or any guidance that would come from RSA regarding fee schedules. Our policy manual, it just pretty much pertains to what's an allowable service for voc rehab. It doesn't go to the level of fee schedules. So we have a lot of fee schedules that we approve, so we for us, we just pretty much go through our fiscal department. This is a medical service, you know, so it's a little bit different. That's why we go through, this is why we've in the past gone through DSS. It's actually, you know, a little different, you know, because it's actually like a medical, you know, that's how I've always understood it to be. But anyway, the short is that FIOA doesn't limit anything.
Okay, thanks, Mary. And by the way, I did get your email, so it didn't go down a black hole. Somebody did get it.
But that's it. That's as far as we go in VR. Like, we don't have anything more specific to that.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate the clarification.
Al, this is Chris. Am I accurate in understanding that we are done with the programmed portion of the agenda? And is it possible to bring up a totally new topic?
Sure.
Okay. So I just wanted to... And I do appreciate the board's these special meetings. Meeting on an even more frequent basis gives us an opportunity to get into some of these topics in a little more detail. But I just wanted to, the Deafblind Advisory Committee met yesterday, and I just wanted to report on one nagging and continuing issue that troubles us and plagues the administration of the program, and ask if there's this is sort of just even a brainstorming, just if anyone has any ideas to address this. But I'm sure that the members of the board and others in this present in this meeting are aware that the primary focus of the Deafblind Advisory Committee, which meets four times a year, is to divide up monies that were set aside, that are set aside every year by the state to assist in facilitating social interaction for our clients with deaf blindness, and that funds are available in the amount up to $10,000 per client to get out into the community and engage in social interaction, whether that is for recreational purposes or it's actually at the client's discretion. They can also be as I say, recreation and social interaction, but it could also be assisting a client who has communication challenges with even medical appointments or shopping, or, you know, it's sort of a client can, at his or her discretion, use these funded services to, you know, assist in their participation in life activities throughout Connecticut. So, long story short, we have a number of folks who whose primary communication modality is American Sign Language, and we have a provider of services to facilitate this interaction, known as the Communication Advocacy Network, which was established partly to facilitate some years ago when they were meeting prior to their incorporation. They came to BESBE and discussed, for example, the challenges that some of our clients face in getting to doctor's appointments and communicating there. Now, there is obviously an obligation on the part of doctors to provide interpreter services, not exactly an incentive for a doctor to take on a client in need of those facilitated services, and that's why some of our clients choose to provide those services as part of their overall annual expenditure of funds. But we are also, there's quite a number of our clients, close to, more than a dozen, who use different communication modalities than American Sign Language. A lot of our clients were acquired their deafness or hard of hearing later in life, and so they are not familiar or interested in using ASL, or perhaps, you know, their vision is such that they cannot see. You know, we have a number of clients with residual vision, but some are not able to see ASL even at close range. And so we're looking for providers of community integration services who utilize alternative methods of communication. Our quite a few of our clients are served through the Communication Advocacy Network. As I said, and most of those folks use ASL. We also have some clients with perhaps highly specialized needs who have had grants written on their behalf, and they recruit a service provider familiar with that client's, you know, particular communication modality. But we're also challenged because we do need some providers of these community interaction services who are familiar with other modalities. And we have experienced a great deal of difficulty internally because of the fact that we are, you know, most of the providers we're working with, I would almost say specialize or focus on recruiting those who use ASL. And we are looking for perhaps a community organization or even, I don't know, some sort of a forum that we could use to recruit to meet the needs of our clients who don't use ASL but are persons with deaf blindness. So I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm sorry if that's a bit of a long-winded introduction, but that's kind of what we're up against. And I am, you know, would be more than thrilled to hear. Yes.
It's Beth. I'm not sure, but I'm thinking that the very large guide dog organizations like New York Guiding Eyes or Seeing Eye may hire people to do specifically blind, deaf clients. They may have someone trained in that department. You can ask them.
Well, that's an excellent idea, Beth. So maybe I can...
The small schools probably don't have the money or the energy, but the two large ones I can think of, they work with those people. I would think they have specific trainers for that.
That's great. Thank you. There's an excellent idea. We'll investigate.
Things come to mind when I think about what you mentioned, Chris. The first one being whether there are children's services clients who have that unique need, and the other would be whether there have been VR clients who've approached the agency and have discovered that they have that same need as well. So perhaps those are two places where we could explore what has been done. Catherine's not here, but Mary is. So I don't know, Mary, if you've encountered anybody who's had that particular communication need?
We haven't, actually. We haven't had anything come up in the last few years. But if we did, you know, we typically would collaborate with our, you know, Connecticut Tech DAC over with Arlene. She usually assists us. Because if we do have individuals who have very unique needs for deaf-blind, we collaborate with VRS. But really, it hasn't come up recently that I can think of, you know. Sorry, that's a very
humble. Yeah. No, thank
you. But yeah, it's actually a very small population for us. But, you know, I would say recently it has come up that we are working with much more deaf-blind than we had in the past. And what we've been doing is, like I said, collaborating. They're assigned a VR counselor at VRS and a VR counselor at BESB. So we work together. So the VRS counselor will usually take care of the deaf needs. That's really how we've been doing it recently. So,
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually working well.
Okay, Al, I have
Steve, two thoughts. Go ahead, Steve.
One is you ought to contact the American School for the Deaf and see what kind of programs they have or resources. And the second one is the Helen Keller National Center for Deafblind on Long Island. They may know of resources. You can talk to the executive director. I wouldn't go below her. I would go right to the executive director because I've worked with her many years ago. So I think those two could help us with broader resources, and we see what we can do to develop it.
I agree, and I just want to add, and I will give Chris the information, that we have had an individual hired as an advocate to work for Helen Keller. So she actually went to a program there, and they hired her, and she's moved there. So it's actually a great, great success story. So I'll give Chris the information. I'm sure she'd be willing to. You can start there, you know, and see if she can help you.
Yeah, and then Jeffrey is head of the American School for the Deaf, so he might have some ideas as well.
That's great. Well, I appreciate the ideas, and if anyone later has any others, please get in touch with me directly. Thank you.
Excellent. And if you are still looking for further insight, Chris, I would encourage you to bring it up in the public portion of our next meeting, which is scheduled next month. Month after next, yeah.
December, right.
Thanks, Al. Yeah, you bet.
Al, Beth?
Go ahead, Beth.
You still looking for public comments? Steve had one.
Yep.
My only comment is that November 5th, you're all welcome to go to the state convention in Rocky Hill at the Sheridan. 9 a.m. We'll have
some
that information if people are interested.
100% in person?
In person.
Very good. Okay, thank you, Beth. Any others? By hearing none, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second. Not motion to adjourn.
Okay, we have a motion from Beth. Do we have a second?
Eileen seconds.
Okay, we have a second from Eileen. It is not debatable. Therefore, we stand adjourned until December, or if we have a special meeting between now and then, we stand adjourned until then. Thank you all.
Thank you.